Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is a CC Radio podcast.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFOradio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that would help us grow. Tonight I'm joined by Luke, and Luke encountered a demon while living over in Asia. Luke, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, bro.
It is exciting to have you on, mate, because demon stories are a very rare occurrence here on the Believe podcast, and yours is absolutely next level, mate. I don't know how you live with this. Are you able to go back to the start and tell us how this thing may have entered your life?
Yeah, for sure. As I said to you before, just before we were on the air, like it's a bit of a long story, and I'll need to give you some insight for everything to sort of link up and make sense. But the story has a lot to do with a recent movie that came out about the Japanese underground that was featured on what was that movie called? The Outsider, which I actually did advising for in pre-production when I was translating, when they came over to interview my tattoo artist, which is very much ingrained into this story. And also I was on Viceland recently, which was seen all over the world. So it's crazy how many people have approached me in airports for that, as opposed to my current work, which I was used to, putting out, four books recently and different movies and TV shows that I'd done and stuff. So I was like really sort of put back, because I didn't want that attachment to, my so-called mafia tats. I don't think it's, my involvement in that scene and everything is not something I'm hugely proud of. But I understand they've got their place in society, and they see themselves as, the last living samurai and local militia and all that sort of thing. But I don't think organized crime should be glamorized at all. But it's something I do sort of know quite a bit about, being based in Japan. Basically, I first went over there in 2005, spent most of my adult life there, and worked a lot of doors and close protection, private investigation gigs, and that sort of scene. So you end up rubbing shoulders with a lot of people in the underground. But luckily, a positive sort of story comes out of that. That's how I sort of first got involved in this whole. I think people like to label it as a bit of a spiritual thing. I'm not very much that way inclined, although I am Buddhist, have been for over 20 years. I'm not one of these people, as I said to you before, trying to say, oh, look at me, I'm special. I've got, I want to be labeled this or that. I just had some strange encounters, and I just thought I'd share it and put it out there, man. So, yeah, but I am a follower of your podcast, by the way. I've listened to the first one the other night, and I can see it's come a long way, man. So congratulations. Yeah, that's really awesome.
The first episode was a bit rough.
Oh, no. I mean, Alan, you know, was very humble beginnings too, man, like just a phone, and even our Japanese version of the podcast and that has come a long way, and we're using similar setup to you now. And it's really good to see that people have taken interest in this sort of thing. I think it's a kind of cool subject, you know. And, you know, we've had all sorts of guys from survival experts to LAPD to medium and spiritual types. And I've got to say, man, like, before I go on with my story, I'm quite a skeptic on most things, and but I remain impartial. I give everyone that sort of basic respect, you know what I mean? I don't sit there and, you know, try to disrespect them or disregard their encounter or you know what I mean? But I'll hear everyone out. So I've had two encounters myself out in the bush, but, you know, I have trouble explaining it, but I always constantly go through that process of elimination, like, you know, not like these guys that I've told you about before that go out and they're so-called researchers, and every time they find something, you know, it's like, well, I don't know anyone else that lucky, you know, not even real scientists that have got a degree and everything. So, I remain impartial to it all, if you know what I'm saying. So, yeah.
I think it's a good way to be as well, because when you start to label yourself as a, you know, as a researcher or as an expert, you put yourself in a very, very, I guess, small box, and mm-hmm. there's really no way to come out of that without, I guess, sometimes looking a little bit silly.
I totally agree, man. And I've worked on firearms, on shooting ranges, being a firearms instructor and specialist in certain things, being an armorer, and certain martial arts as well. I do have qualifications and, you know, lifetime of experience in that, so I can speak on those subjects. But on this, I've just got to remain impartial, because it's just something that happened. It's just an encounter. And I see what you think. I was kind of spooked as a kid, you know what I mean? Like in Australia growing up, and my old man was a cop. He was a detective and then head of some, TAC crime unit or something like that? As I said, I've lived away for a long time, so I didn't have much to do with him. But as I said, I end up working doors and bouncing and doing a bit of PI work and close protection for some high-profile people, especially in Japan. And I've worked a lot in LA, and especially on shooting ranges and that. And just a bit of a nomad in terms of, you know, Jippo sort of thing, just going back and forth around the place between Japan and the States and having the show in the UK and that. So it's definitely shaped my sort of perception of things, and it's not typical to most Aussies and you know what I mean, like their sort of thought process or the belief. So it's kind of hard to bring this sort of thing up with people. But yeah, man, as I said to you before, I think before we were on the air, I've been through 35 countries and worked in a lot of high risk environments and countless violent situations on the job, and not a lot really scares me. I'm not trying to say that to sound like a badass at all. I'm 6'5 and I'm 115 kilos, and as I said to you before we spoke, I just finished training, but I don't talk about it. I don't go out there and label myself as like this badass. I'm quiet. I keep to myself, you know what I mean? So but having been based in Japan for that long, you know, most of my adult life until just recently, and still back and forth, I do have a very different group of circle of people around me, and having that Buddhist sort of and Taoist beliefs, we refer to what you might know as gods or deities as ancestors, people that were before us that have left sort of teachings and guidelines and stuff like that. So Taoism is like how to interact with your environment, and Feng Shui comes from that, Tai Chi comes from that, traditional Chinese medicine comes from that. Did I mention Tai Chi? That's something I've been doing for probably 20 years. And anyway, from in the Buddhist sects, especially groups that I'm involved in, there is certain disciplines that talk about spirits a lot more. And as I said, I'm very impartial to all that. But demons in Japan, for example, are sort of, if I can relate this to a Western sort of belief system or understanding, it would be like a gargoyle. So when you see basically, I've got a chain on me that I wear every day that's got one of the goddess of mercy. It's from our main sort of ancestral god in the Buddhist groups and Taoist group that I'm involved with as well. In Japan, we'll call her Kandon Sama, or in Chinese, it's Guan Yin or Guan Yim, I think, in Thai. But anyway, on the other side of the coin, where that sort of dark and what you'll see is evil side, if you see my back piece, it's like, well, that's pretty confronting for some people. They think it's a big dragon or demon, but it's a protector and what we call a mamori, like something that protects you. So I've got little charms, good luck charms in my wallet, for example, or attached to my bag, because I travel to so many messed up places with so much shit kicking off all the time. It's like, it's just a bit of a personal belief, you know what I mean? I don't know if it's a bit of a placebo effect, but as I did mention to you before, I've seen things that I don't think other people could really fathom, and that's in real life, that's not spirits or anything. So I do really tend to believe in these protectors. But there's definitely a calm and cool, collected, sort of polite, very nice sort of serenity type feel to my city in Japan, which is Saitama City, Omiya. My head office and my main gym is still based there, and house and everything. So very much still ingrained to that. But there's also a very dark and evil side, and I was exposed to that just, you know, working the nightlife, red night districts, Mizushobai, as we call it, and rubbing shoulders with many from the underground. So I've been exposed to what some people would only really see in the movies and might think's cool, but it's really not. So since 08, I was kind of stalked by one of the local clans trying to recruit me. My Japanese YouTube channel blew up at the time. As I said to you before, it's helped me get where I am in the industry with TV shows and movies and 4 books and 20 locations throughout Japan and everything. But you never know who's watching you, and that's always stuck in my mind. You know what I mean? Like, because I'd have people pop up all the time. And as the law changed in 2009, I think it was, for organized crime in Japan, it would be a lot harder to spot certain people. They stopped getting tatted up, for one. A lot of them turn into more of a business-minded type of approach to their operations. And your typical thugs or shit kickers, so to speak, they would sort of cause drama. But your real sort of, I'm going to call them influential types, I don't like to use the M word, they're very hard to spot. So I wasn't paranoid, but I was always prepared, if that makes sense. And that can lead to a pretty heightened sense of stress. And I was stalked a lot, and I was challenged quite a bit. And it led to a lot of interesting gigs anyway, because I had that spotlight on me. And when I walked through the streets of my city, Saitama City or Omiya, a lot of people know me. I go take guys back and we'll go down to the local nightlife area, and I've got all these dudes stand up from going, sensei, like this. It's I'm trying to say that, you know, this sort of thing isn't cool, but then when people come over and see, they go, oh wow, this is like the movies. I'm like, well, yeah, just remain impartial, just nod your head, bow, say good day, and be on your way. And I think that's best. So I try to not get myself tied up in any of that. But one of my very close friends, who's my tattoo artist, Horiren, is she's training to be a Buddhist, what would you call in English, like a priest, female priest, what would you call that, a nun, I guess, obosan in Japanese. And so I've spent 200 hours with her getting inked, but then also the whole time speaking about the relationship between Buddhist philosophies and how they're depicted within the art of Irezumi, which you may be familiar with, and what we call wabori, because there's yobori and wabori. Wabori is like the Japanese art of tattooing. So like washoku is Japanese food. Wabori, horu, is to dig or to engrave, or in this case to be tattooing. So the real term for Japanese tattooing is how we call it in Japan, is wabori. So yeah, so I've been learning a lot about that, and all the sort of how the traditions and belief systems are reflected within the arts of the tattooing arts, you know, and why a lot of these, let's call them influential underground people, have certain things on them. But, you know, she got to know me and got to know my story, and that's how I ended up with my ink. But the first time I met her was at her 10-year anniversary in 08, I think it was. And we had 120 guys with different back pieces and girls, with different back pieces over that 10-year span, all stand on this one stage, and she wanted to get them photographed. And it was, you know, there's a documentary being made and all that there too. But there's people from different clans, and with that comes rivals. And, you know, she needed someone impartial that could speak the language and could be personable and deal with any, you know, sort of real drama if it kicked off. So that's how I got that job and got involved with her. And she's not with any sort of clan specifically anymore. She's a very well-renowned and respected artist in the community, so that's really cool. And she gives talks even here in Australia, in Brisbane once, does a lot of charity work for the victims of Fukushima and Kumamoto as well, as I did with the victims of the earthquake and the relief needed and everything like that. So anyway, back on track. so I'm very involved with her and on a friendship, on a friendly level, I guess you'd say, and just, have learned quite a bit about the cultural side of that. And so it's, as I said to you before, I translated and advised for her when the producers for that movie came in for Netflix and a bunch of other projects, and also Viceland when Needles and Pins came in. So, I'm used to talking about this subject and trying to remain impartial and not glamorize it. But my back piece, the first bit of my tattooing that I did over there, which is all I've got now, it's weird because someone tagged me at it on Facebook, and in the first few days of Viceland putting that out, I think 2 or 3 million people saw that, and I got all these messages like, oh, it looks like you're in the mafia and all this sort of thing, and I said the M-word just now, didn't I? But, they've sort of branded me in a certain way, and I was really unhappy with it because I don't think that any of that sort of thing's cool at all, as I said. But I got that back piece because I was involved in quite a sketchy scene. Well, things were heated at one point, and I always wanted someone to watch my back. I had partners, I had, security teams that I was training in Tokyo and all over the place. And when I was traveling for protection assignments, there was me and one other guy, or me and two other guys, retired special ops guys, this sort of things, Japanese guys, obviously. But it was always sort of on my way home from work, I'd stop by the local Zen temple or the shrine that's just next to my house. And I always sort of felt like I was being watched, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know if you've ever been out in the bush and you're out walking or whatever, and you just feel like you're being watched, and then you see there's another hiker there or anything like that. I just sort of felt like, and this is always like 3, 4, even 5 a.m. or whatever. So I just stop and do Tai Chi or Tong Long or one of the arts that, just practice. And I didn't think too much of it, but it was around that same sort of time when the first sort of encounter, as I guess I should call it, sort of happened. So we have a bunch of gatherings that we do around the world. Like for Silat, we'll go to Malaysia. We'll do a bunch of training there for like a week long on Langkawi Island or whatever. We do survival camps in Thailand where we'll teach survival and personal security concepts, and we'll do a bunch of shooting from cars and, working with local law enforcement, spec ops and all that. And I was working at the police shooting range, and the manager lady that was sort of translating, helping us acquire ammunition and helping me get on board with local cops and become friends with them, and them even lending me their guns sometimes on their days off. That was pretty cool. She played that part. So anyways, I'd finished up on the last day. We'd had a big shoot. We had 35 to 40 guys, I can't remember, from all over the world. The States, Germany, UK, even Australia, obviously. Australian Federal Police, one of our guys is a Fed that represents us down south at our branch. And so we're all pretty serious about what we do. But we went back to the resort, and I was about to give a debrief, and I was just knackered. So I said to her, oh, I just want to grab one of these motorbikes and head up to the convenience store and get an iced coffee. I was kind of addicted to it. And she goes, oh, I want an ice cream. And I said, oh, ice cream. What sort of ice cream are you talking about? Like, what do you want? She said, I just go with you, like, I said, okay, cool. Jump on the bike. And I'm a pretty responsible guy. I'm a father, I'm a family man, and I protect people for a living for a long time. So I'm not an idiot. You know what I mean? I don't jump on and go, oh, check this out, and fang a wheelie or anything like that. But and she's an older lady too. You know what I mean? Like, she's not old. I'm not saying by any stretch, but she was probably pushing 50, and I wasn't going to be a knob on the bike. So anyway, she jumped on, and I took it easy, went up to the road, got a coffee and an ice cream, come back, and noticed that the road was sort of like, it was out on the beach. Our resort was out on the beach. So between the main road where the shop was and the road that leads to it was parts of it were dirt and gravel and a bit of concrete here and there. And it was just, it's a bit of a mess. But anyway, we're on the way back, and I thought I was taking it easy. I was going quite slow. I must have hit the sand, and next thing I know, man, like, we're in the air, the bike just flipped, and I don't know what's going on. I was standing in 40-degree heat most of the day with all my gear on, shooting and running and gunning and throwing lead down range and, you know, training a bunch of guys. And it's very high stress. You have to be on point all day. You know what I mean? You're being safe yourself, obviously. But also when you're teaching safe usage and handling of firearms, you've got to be on everyone, but keep a very relaxed sort of demeanor about you, because if you stress anyone out or cause them to panic or whatever, which has happened in the past, in LA, for example, I've seen people cause accidents, you know what I mean? So we kind of try to stay very calm. Having said that, keeping that balance is very tiring. So by the time I got back, I stripped off, you know, I think I only had some boardies on. So as we're flying through the air, it's hit me like, oh my God, you tool, you've only got, oh my Buddha, you tool, you've gone through the air and now, you know, you're facing the ground. I've hit the deck. I've got bark off all over me, like my chest, my arms, my knees, my elbows, you know, my hands, even my hands, that sucked. You know, I've got to use my hands for work, man, like, you know, running and gunning and teaching weapons and all this stuff. And now I can't even hold, you know, soap or anything. So that really sucked. But we hit the deck and she's, I just heard her scream and I looked over and the bike was on top of her, you know, the muffler. It was on her arm and she'd hit the deck as well, obviously, and she was wearing a singlet or something like that. And where she'd had bark come off her arm, a lot of skin come off her arm, the bike had landed and it was burning her.
Oh, no.
So I've sort of come to and I've looked over and go, oh, shit. And I've pushed the bike off her. Not like I'm the Hulk or anything, but I'm just saying it was a little bike, you know, like a moped, but it sounds like a dirt bike and you feel like your Sons of Anarchy riding with your crew through the streets. Just a bunch of tools, really. But, but yeah, man, we're just having fun. So anyway, I was being careful, as I said, but it was only a little bike, so I pushed it off her. And I've sort of looked around behind me and there was – it's really bizarre, man. We'd landed between two trees, like palm trees. And in front of us, sort of, sorry, behind us, but if we were facing the way in which we sort of flew off the bike, it'd be in front of us a small Buddhist shrine. Now, a shrine looks like a mini temple. It's just a place of worship where you will do prayers and offerings and stuff like that. We have them all over Japan. We have them in our house. We have them in our main dojo back in Omiya in my city over there. And so it's a common thing, but just the fact that I didn't notice it going past and the fact that we landed right in front of it and missed these two trees, which we could have, you know, come flying off that bike, landed head first into and died, you know, freak accidents like that. I saw one of my friends when I was 16 die like that. It was absolutely horrible. He'd come off a bike and hit a car like that. So, you know, it's something that I'd consider to be a near-death experience. And anyway, we got up on our feet eventually and we're all dazed and disorientated and what, and we're heading back to towards the hotel, and my guys come looking for us because we were longer than, you know, 10 minutes or whatever. They come looking, which is good of them, but most of them are like cops and military special forces, whatever. So they see us walking down the road like zombies, you know, we got blood coming out of us all over the place and we're all limping and, you know, like this. And, so they help us get back to the hotel. And I remember she went to hospital and come back a few hours later. I'm lying there bleeding, trying to patch myself up. I've always got first aid kits on me from being on the range, but she brought back this sort of curry based thing. I think it was called cumin. I could be wrong. But something like that. And she goes, look, I know this is horrible. I've been patched up, you know, I'm fine. I only just had a scar and I'm sore, but you're in a really bad way. But see, I know guys that ended up in the hospital down there and had to get their arm. One guy, an Irish fella that had a bike accident, had to get his arm amputated. See what I mean about not being able to talk properly? So anyway, I was like, I'm not going to hospital. You know, I'll just patch myself up. So she brought this curry back and threw it in all my wounds. And I'm sitting there screaming like, oh, my God, that was like instant regret, you know, the worst thing possible. I've gone, why would you do this to me? You know, I've just got mad road rash and you're just like, you put this curry in it. I'm like, yeah, sure, that sounds great. So that was a really bad idea. And then she left, went back to whatever she was doing. I can't remember. And I'm sitting there in bed, man, and I'm just sort of in and out of consciousness. I was knackered. I was absolutely knackered. I was really tired. But I remember looking forward at one point and I looked to the side, and as I looked from my bed towards the bathroom, on the side of me, on my left-hand side, there was this big window, and on top of that window where there was like a curtain, there was a curtain rod, there was this massive black, for lack of a better term, what I would say demon-looking thing just sitting there with his knees bent, his arms sort of draped, sort of hanging over one knee was his top arm, and the other arm was hanging down, and he was just looking at me, and I was like, what? Trying to keep this PG rated or whatever we call, but yeah, I let out some profanity, and I was like, what? And then I looked to the side, and I looked back, and it was still there, and I looked away again to the side, and I looked back, and it was still there.
Oh, wow.
And I turned my head to the side, like, you know how when you look at something, you're like, what the fuck? You know? I was like that, and it did the same thing. It looked at me like, what?
Oh, that's and creepy.
Yeah, it was really creepy, man. I was like sitting there. I don't panic about much. I told you before we went on air some of the things that I've been through, and not a lot phases me, man, you know? And that did. I was like, what? And I look away again. I look back, and it was gone. That was it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it had – so just to be specific – because I know everyone's going to ask, well, what did it look like? You know, it was big and black. And as I said, I'm 6'5", 115 kilos, 265 pounds for those over the States or whatever. So I'm a bigger fella, but this thing was bigger than me. And I'm not trying to say that it was a yowie or anything like that. I'm just saying it was big. And the face and the head of it was kind of the best thing I can describe that's similar of relevance is, do you remember that skateboard brand Spitfire wheels with it looks like a smiley face, but it's turned into a demon. The head sort of flames. And yeah, it was, it sort of looked like that, man. That's the best thing that I can sort of relate it to from memory. So I was, it's so clear in my mind when I think about it now. It's such a vivid memory. Like it's, you know what I mean? Like I can remember because after that, as I said, I had an accident after that and brain surgery, and I've got brain damage since then, but I can still remember this very clearly, even just looking at it, even the room and everything. But what happened before and after that is still a bit of a blur, if that makes sense.
And now a quick word from our sponsor.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month. Yeah, no, and it would be. I mean, you've just gone through a pretty traumatic accident, and then you've seen something that is, you know, they'll just mentally scar you for forever seeing something like that. And considering that it's so big, that would have been terrifying in itself.
Well, I mean, one of my current partners that I train with a lot of time in the States for catch wrestling and that, he's 160 kilos, 6'8" or whatever he is. So I wasn't really, I'm used to big things and intimidating things and that, but that was like just this sense of vulnerability, man. Like, Jesus, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? Like,
it's the unknown that kind of makes that terrifying.
100%. 100%, man.
So,
100%.
So when you were seeing this thing, could you see like any detail to it? Like, could you see if it was, if it was hairy or if it was like smooth skin, anything like that?
No, I'll be honest. I couldn't see anything like that, man. There was no definition in terms of that sort of thing. And I'll get to later on why I kind of, when I was talking to someone else on my podcast, why what they said was sort of validated. But just in a nutshell, it's like if something walks past you or something moves corner of your eye. Like I used to hunt a lot as a kid back here in Australia, and you'd see a kangaroo move through the bushes or a rabbit or whatever we're hunting, you know what I mean, or pigs or whatever. And you see it and it's kind of like that. It registers on your field of vision or your peripheral. And then you sort of look at it. It was kind of like that, man. I saw it, and you're sitting there thinking, "Shit, I saw it, but I didn't see it, but I know I saw it." If you get what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Like it, and the fact that when you turned your head back and it was still there, that's really validating.
It was like, I think it was three or four times that I went back and forth and back and forth, and I think the third time, I think, when I turned my head, like, what? I'm trying to get a better look at it, but it was like, Have you ever woken up in the morning, when I used to live with Koreans, did this project with Koreans for a while, and they were talking about ghosts and that sort of thing. And when they wake up in the morning, can't move, this paralysis, they talk about a ghost coming down and holding them down, all that. And I'd had similar things, but I never saw anything. But it's sort of like that when you wake up in the morning and someone says something, or your missus might go out or whatever, and you register that that's going on, but you weren't awake. Do you get what I mean? It's like that sort of in-between state of consciousness where you're awake, but you're not, sort of thing. So for me, it kind of felt like that, man. And I was, you know, fast forward 2 weeks, if you don't mind, if I jump.
Yeah, go for it.
I don't mind answering any question. If you want me to elaborate on anything, please just interrupt me. But just to, again, put it in perspective, I was 2 weeks later, because before the gig in Thailand, they said to me, what are you doing? You've got this brain tumor. You're due for a stroke or an aneurysm. Have you had one yet? And I was like, what? Nah. And they're like, well, what are you doing next Tuesday? I said, I'm working at a police shooting range. I can't be here. I've got a massive gig. I'd have to, you know, I just can't do it. And I said, well, you could die. And I said, well, I could die any day. And then I'll see you in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever it was. So I come back. It was really awesome because I wasn't even a resident of Australia, man. They put me through. They did my brain surgery. They removed the tumor and everything for free. It was absolutely free because I was like a category 4 or whatever, like high risk of dying. So, you know, everyone's freaking out. My parents came down to, this is in Brisbane. They're like worried that I was going to die again, all this sort of thing, because I'd had tumors taken out of me since I was a kid. And I just wasn't fazed. I was gone through a lot, you know, working in Brazil and Mexico and all these really rough parts of the world. And I just thought, whatever, I'll see you on the other side. When I woke up, the doctor said to me, you're effing lucky. I was a South African woman. She's like, we nearly lost you, like this. And I was like, oh, all right, sorry, I didn't do my job. You're the one cutting my head open. Like, what are you on about, you know? And then it sort of became apparent and clear that, you know, they sort of hit some sort of main vein and my head swelled up and I was actually quite badly injured. So I remember I had to get out of the hospital because all sorts of, you know, wardens were just being pricks and I had issues and I went up and stayed in the hinterland of the Sunshine Coast where I'm sort of half based now. And I was in the Sunshine Coast staying with my auntie, who's a nurse practitioner. So she was looking after me, as was my mum, because I could barely move, man. I couldn't feed myself, couldn't do anything. And do you remember that old movie, The Coneheads? I'd sort of seen the... Yeah, I end up looking like one of that. I'll send you photos later if you want. You can see my head still to this day has a massive scar. It's very deformed. And it's funny because everyone looks at it, but I think no one wants to say anything. I'm like, you couldn't offend me if you tried. I don't care. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't take myself seriously at all, man. But I'm just saying, yeah, it was in a pretty bad way. And I was sitting there. And I was on these medications. I actually become addicted to opioids, so Endone and Targin. And I was having really, really horrible dreams, man, like things that I could never see myself doing, like very violent things. And don't get me wrong, as someone that's worked doors for just a bit over a decade, I guess, for that time I've been in just, you know, more than my fair share of encounters I didn't want to be in, put it that way. And but I never intentionally have ever screwed anyone over or, you know, bashed anyone that didn't deserve it, you know, that sort of thing. I caught a couple of guys beating up women on the way home in Japan just recently, and I talked about that on my YouTube, so that just to give it some context. I only give it to someone that deserves it. Other than that, I'm quite a friendly guy, I'd say, you know what I mean? I like to be approachable and someone who's a group leader and has to lead by example and be positive and productive and persistent, all these things in classes. I try to, you know, lead by example and not be a prick to anyone. But in these dreams, man, I'm telling you, like, it was horrible. I woke up and I was scared. I was scared of what I was doing. I was scared of what was happening. And I haven't felt that vulnerable or weak or, do you know what I mean? Like, since I was a kid, man, like, and it just wasn't me. I'm like, what is this?
You was know, it the really... same type of feeling that you got when you originally saw this potential demon?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Do you think it was potentially trying to change the way that you were thinking then?
See, until just recently, man, like until I sent you the original sort of story and just talking to you now, I didn't really put those two together. Like, I thought it, to be honest, I thought it was the drugs. The Endone and Targin. I've spoken to other people that have been hooked on it as well, and it's just absolutely horrible. But I don't know. I'm open to that idea, but I'm not convinced, if you get what I mean. Same as my encounters in the bush. I'm not going to tell you, oh, that was a Yowie. It's just something interesting that has happened and has sparked my interest, and that's probably what led me to your podcast, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, yeah, I'm just not definitive about it. But having said that, the doctor came up and saw me. I had a home doctor, and they were testing what was leaking out of my head, which was only hematobin. So they were checking if it wasn't like spinal fluid or anything like that. And I said to him, I've got to get off these drugs. I'm having horrible, horrible dreams. If I don't take it for half a day or whatever, my stomach is in knots and this and that. What's going on? He goes, look, you're addicted. I said, what do you mean? And he goes, well, we're having withdrawal symptoms like any junkie. And I was like, oh, awesome. Thanks. So you doctors know how horrible these things are for you, and you go and prescribe them. That's wicked. Cheers, man. Jesus. Like, you know, and so I, that's at that point is when I first started using medicinal cannabis. And I have a prescription now. I'm a TGA approved patient. That's half the reason I spend a lot of time in Australia, other than trying to get my daughter to learn English and go to a school here. But, you know, I've had all sorts of things in the States, man, like edibles and things. And I've had mad trips and all that sort of thing whilst experiencing that. And I've never had any sort of hallucination that has made me see a spirit or a demon or have any bad dreams or anything. It was only at that time that I was on these prescription drugs, these opioids, this endonotargin, as I said, and it was only around that time. So as I think I said to you, my head was swelling up and it ended up popping, and it's very hard to explain, but I'll send you photos. You're probably going to be a bit grossed out. But I woke up, man. I was in my chair because I had to sleep sitting up. So I woke up to this like type sound, and there's blood spurting all over my chest and my arms and that. And I'm like, what? And I don't know. I guess my mum and my auntie, the nurse, could hear the commotion. They came in and they were patching me up, and you know, had towels on me and all that. And as I said, the doctor was coming up and testing that after that to make sure it wasn't spinal fluid. But with that, my head popping, so to speak, it relieved me so much. Like, I was able to sort of see clearly and think a little bit clearer, and I was able to stand up alone for the first time. Went to the toilet and I come back, and as I've come back to the room and I've sat down in the chair that I sleep in, and I closed the door jammed, and it was as if someone put their foot in it. You know what I mean? If you close the door and someone's put their foot in and gone, hold on, I've got something to say to you, sort of thing.
Yep.
You know, like that sort of thing. And this... It's hard to explain just over the phone, but this big black hand with very long fingers. Like, I've got a big hand, obviously, being a bigger dude. The fingers were like twice as long as mine. I've got a size 15 shoe, so I've got a big hand as well, if you know what I mean. So the fingers and the hand and the arm of this thing were a lot bigger than mine. I was freaking, man. Like, it came around to my side of the door. It sort of come around, and just the way that it moved, like sort of not clenching its fist, but the fingers wiggling as it sort of grabbed this thing, latched onto the door, pulled it towards itself, sort of thing, as it sort of coming towards me, but it was sort of latching onto it so it could pull itself around. And I started to see the face, and straight away I knew that it was this thing again. And I was just like,
you're kidding.
I'm lost for words now. I was like, F off. That's what I said to you before about parameters and explicit language. So I was screaming like that. And my mum, and it's kind of weird being a guy my size and saying, mummy, which wasn't what happened, but it may as well have, because they come running in the room like, what's going on? And I was just like, I was so dumbfounded, man. I didn't know what it was. I had no explanation. But it's like, have you ever been that stressed and just annoyed and effed off that you just want to go to sleep? You know what I mean? I think any man with a wife and kids like me has definitely been in that situation.
Yeah,
like,
I can relate to that, mate.
I've got a teenage daughter, bro, so I'm like, do you. I'm going to go to bed. You know what I mean? Like, so it was kind of like that, man. I've just gone – it's like I just gave up. I didn't know.
You were just emotionally drained from it.
Yeah, and just so – yeah, I'd say, and mentally as well. Like, I wasn't freaking out or crying. I kind of was intimidated, obviously, because I didn't know what this was, and it's not as if I can fight it. I was kicking and throwing my hands at the door, and it was as if it was making no difference. I'm going, you know, F off. I'm trying to kick and just make any attempt to get this thing to back away from me. And it was as if, I don't know, man, a second or two after that, it was just disappeared, just gone, just absolutely nothing, you know?
That's really, really terrifying there, Luke. It almost sounds like this thing has just been maybe – do you think this thing is attached to you?
I feel that you know, since talking to everyone in Japan, in Malaysia, I spent a lot of time in Malaysia too, and everyone in my sort of inner circle, if that makes sense, from what we've discussed, I feel like it was a protector. Although I've spoken to many people, even on my podcast, as I said, that are, that sort of say they talk to spirits or spiritual mediums and this and that. And I, you know, my former self would have just been like, yeah, right, idiot. You know, like I've had good weed too, but I'm not that kind of, you know what I mean? Like I haven't seen anything like that, but I'm just impartial these days, man, because I've had my experience and my truth is my truth. You know what I mean? It's neither fact nor opinion. It's something that I've encountered and I believe, and I hear all these people that give their stories to you, man, and I believe that they believe it. So I can't say, because I'm that way inclined. I listen to a lot of scientific people and researchers in other podcasts, you know what I mean, that do research on, you know, psychology, for example, or astrophysicists, you know, like, and I'm very intrigued by how they approach things. And I think the right way to be is impartial. Just look at the so-called evidence or facts or information that you have, and make a informed, educated decision that's not biased or not emotionally sort of directed or influenced, if that makes sense. So I'm very open to that idea, but again, I'm not going to stand there and say, oh, this demon's following me, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough too. And it's a really good way to be because, you know, like we said earlier, it's really easy to be one of those people who fall into the trap of, I believe everything. Everything that I read on the internet is true. This thing is 100% following me, and I'm definitely a psychic person.
The thing is, man, like I've come across people that are, you know, their truth is their truth. They believe like the earth is flat or whatever, and that's fine if that's what makes them happy. Doesn't affect me and how I sleep, but I'm just saying there's so much information out there that there's anything out there that can support your argument or your belief system, you know what I mean? And I'm not one that will sit there and look up all this stuff and go, oh, yeah, that's what it was. I live with a yaoi or I live with a demon or whatever. I'm not looking to be labeled as anything special, or I don't need anything special in my life, any sort of special diet or whatever. I'm just not one of those people, to be honest with you, man. So I'm just putting the story out there, and that's what happened to me, and that's how I believe that's my truth, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's absolutely fair enough. Do you think that the life that you've lived has, I guess, conditioned you to have this event happen to you?
As in prepare for it mentally and that?
Well, more so because of the beliefs that you have in the way that you grew up. Do you think that the path that you followed has maybe welcomed this into your life?
I'm not sure, to be honest, man. As I was growing up, it was a bit of a rough childhood. I was out of home at 16. I felt scared and vulnerable, but tried to play the tough guy and, you know, running doors and all that sort of thing for, as I said, about a decade. I thought I was tough. I was very territorial. I was probably just young and stupid and I was sort of excited by scary things, you know, when we had to have contact or had to deal with certain underground influential people. I'll be honest, at one point in the very beginning, I kind of thought that was cool. I never saw myself as like them or one of them, and still never will. But I think that you are a product of your environment and your logic, you know, to your logic, you'll never be wrong. As I speak to other people who speak with such conviction about, you know, their diet or their wokeness or whatever, and that's cool, that's them, man. But it's very hard for me to talk to people about my experiences because, one, as I said to you, in our household, we mainly speak Japanese all day. You know, my missus doesn't speak English and we've been in Japan most of the time. So I have a very different outlook on things, and I definitely agree that, yes, my upbringing and even adulthood, being mostly in Japan, has probably led to this path, so to speak. I think we all have our own path, and as I study a lot of these sort of people might call it spiritual guidances or whatever, with Buddhism and Taoism and all that sort of thing, it influences my approach to things, but I still just try to remain impartial. I've got to say, one thing that makes it really validating for me when I've heard other people's stories, like my second episode of my podcast, Blue Holloway Podcast, is just we had Jake Kassar on. That was about Yowie's, actually, the second episode. And we had Jake Kassar on, who's a renowned Australian survival expert on bush medicine, edible plants in the bush and all that. And he talks about this story of Yowie's. And it was really cool because the most recent three videos on the Australian Yowie Research or Australian Yowie Hunters, whatever it was, on their YouTube channel, he actually was on there with the other two guys that were there with him, and they told the same story. And on my podcast again, another episode where the guy was talking about seeing spirits and all this and that, another way that it was validated that I could believe him was when I asked him, did you see it clearly or not? Like, did you see this? And he goes, man, it was kind of like when you look at something and you sort of see it, but you don't. And the way he described it was different to mine, obviously, as I can't really remember, but it was very much how my experience was. It was very, very similar in that I can tell you what it looks like, but it was, it's just hard to explain. It wasn't like I could see detail, but when I saw the hand come around the corner of that doorman, yeah, that was a lot clearer. I've got a Rottweiler that's in the next room. He's 60 kilos, and it was similar to his arm, but the end of his arm, like the hand on the end of his arm, the hand of it was more sort of human, but sort of like a claw, if you get what I mean. It was and black.
I completely get it. So you could actually see detail on the arm, like hairs and things like that.
I get the sense that it was hairy at that point because it wasn't smooth, if you get what I mean. But it's like
it had some kind of texture to it.
Yeah, definitely. It's like when I've had to do police reports or incident reports or give statements on guys that we've had to be physically, you know, in contact with on the job. It's like if you see that person again, you'd spot them straight away. You'd never forget them. But when you're actually giving a description, this is something that we had to get better at. I remember in the beginning was describing people, and it's kind of hard in the midst of a situation when things are kicking off. You've got that adrenaline dump. You know, you're in a state of sort of panic, and it's very hard to take in a lot of information, let alone what you should do and how you should respond. And you observe, you orientate, you decide, and you act on what you're going to do all within under 2 seconds. That's what we train people to do on the range, you know. And when this happened, it was a situation that I've never been in before, so I'd just shit myself. Yeah, you know? I couldn't draw a weapon. I couldn't, you know what I mean? I'm just like, F off, F off, I'm kicking at it, and I'm this and that. So what I'm trying to say is I got to look at it for sure, and I could probably just even about draw it if I could draw it any better. But it's clear to me what it was, and if I ever saw anything like it, I'd go, that's exactly what it was. But to describe it is quite hard because there's nothing else really like it. That's why I said, like my dog, it looks like his arm, but then the end is like my hand.
So seeing all this in your life there, Luke, have you got an opinion on what you think you saw? Do you think it was something that was physical, that was in the real world? Do you think it was maybe something?
Yeah, no, I don't think it is anything from the physical world. I remember that you said before, you said something about that would leave a mental scar. And the only reason I laughed is because I got this massive scar across the top of my head like a cracked egg, even now that you can see. And I believe that the experience both times is something that I get the sense that only I could see it, if that makes sense. And I'm, as I said, man, I've always been really skeptical of, I go to the markets, you know, we've got your Monday markets here and other markets, and there's always these people with snake oil, you know, they're always trying to sell you these magnetic bracelets or special waters or and I'm really skeptical, bro. You know, like I've talked to people that claim to be clairvoyants or mediums. I just go, okay, yeah, that's cool. That's what you believe in. You're a decent person. You're not hurting anyone, as long as I don't think they're ripping anyone off. I think whatever. But I've, you know, as I said before, doing projects with some Korean guys from the Korean army and that, I was once told something from a guy before. This is before the days of smartphones and social media and all that. So he couldn't have known anything about me, but he could tell me everything about me, and he just knew. It was very, very bizarre, and I've had encounters or cross paths with certain people like that that have that sort of sense, and it sparked my interest, but I sort of left it there. And then when I encountered this, it was like confirmation. It was like going, well, shit, yeah, this is real, if you get what I mean. Real but not real. Not real in the sense that it's not something I can reach out and grab and touch or anything like that, or not like anyone that I thought had anyone broken into my room or anything, but it was real in the sense that I saw it, and I don't know, man, it was just like, it was like I was in touch with some sort of a third dimension or some sort of spiritual realm or whatever. And we talk about this so much in Taoist beliefs and practices and Buddhist, you know, sutras and everything, the different realms and different levels of enlightenment, all these things. And I've just always remained impartial, you know. Even when I was studying this as a teenager, I thought to myself, oh, yeah, whatever, you know, cultivation, all this. I'm a teenager, I'll do what I want, you know. But it's always been there in the back of my mind. And as I said, when this sort of come up and happened, it's like confirmation. Have you ever seen something that you know is going to eventuate and you didn't want to, but it did anyway?
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, oh, shit, you know, that we're just about to go back to Japan and the coronavirus has spread so far there now. We had to cancel all my seminars and tour there for next month. So it was kind of like that. It was like, you know, that there's a reality, this dark element of something that you don't want to face, and you know it's coming, and then it's like, bam, it happened, and that's just happened to us. It's the same thing, man. Like, it's I'd heard about this. I'd so many people had told me about it. I've been studying it. I've been involved in these groups. I try and be as decent of a person as I can. I'm not the best Buddhist out there, obviously. But when this happened, it was just like confirmation that all these things, these spiritual stuff that people go on with, all of a sudden had such more validity to it, if that makes sense.
And it really does. And just before I let you shoot off tonight there, Luke, I have one last question.
Yeah, by all means.
Do you think you'll see this again?
I've learned that in my travels, anything or anybody, they're unpredictable. Everything's unpredictable. But what I can say is that if I did see it again, I'm very intrigued, so I'd like to see it. I saw something driving down the road, like when I thought I had some sort of encounter with some sort of Bigfoot or whatever, you know what I mean? Like a Yowie, something I've always been intrigued by. But it's like, I didn't see enough of it. When I drove past again, it wasn't there. So it was like, I'd like to see it again to so that I could confirm for myself that, yes, I did see this, or yes, this is real. And it's just to that level of being intrigued of like, what was that? Do you know what I mean? It's like, I really want to see it again. But at the same time, man, I can tell you with absolute conviction that I don't want to see it again, because it scared the shit out of me. And I'm not scared of much. Like, I'm not saying this to brag or to try and sound like a badass. I'm just, not much phases me, you know. I've been through so much shit in my life, and I just think, not much phases me, you know. And if I saw that again, I know that I'll have that sense or that feeling of, to be completely honest, just vulnerability, man. Like, not, I mean, what can you do about it? You can't shoot it, you can't stab it, you can't fight it, you can't, you know what I mean? It feels like if I was to try and run, I didn't even run. That wasn't my instinct, because I just knew, like, how would I get away from it? Do you know what I mean? The first time I saw it, I mean, it was just this absolute feeling of vulnerability and genuinely scared, man. I'm not afraid to say that. As I said to you, I don't take myself too seriously. I was very vulnerable and scared. So, I can't say to you with any sort of honesty or conviction that, I'll see that again, or nah, I'll never see it. I can't say, to be honest, man, but I do know how I feel about it, and that's I'm very intrigued, but pretty frightened at the same time. Yeah, so that's where I stand on it, I guess.
And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au. Or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/BelieveUFO Radio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe, Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.